Hey guys, this is Jason from The Awful Truth and My Body Seems Electric. Thank you so much for listening. If you already do, we love you. The more people who get involved with the show, obviously the better the show will be. So please share the show with a friend or anyone you think who will enjoy it. As a special thanks to The Awful Truth listeners, you can use the promo code THEAWFULTRUTH with no spaces for 20% off anything on our Bandcamp page. Thanks again, and let's get started with the f***ing show.
You're listening to The Awful Truth with My Body Sings Electric.
What's up, everybody? You're listening to The Awful Truth with My Body Seems Electric. Thanks for tuning in to iDobe Radio. Our new episodes come on at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. So make sure to be on your guard for that.
Put it on your calendar. I know you're listening on your phone. Just fucking put it on the calendar.
You should be listening to iDobe Radio all the time anyways, but just make sure you're on Tuesday nights. All right?
Did you guys put it on the calendar yet?
No.
Fucking assholes.
What's up? We're My Body Seems Electric, band from Denver. We've got our The Awful Truth podcast, where we talk about the awful truth of music and shit. weekly podcast.
So eloquent.
check out our past episodes on Stitcher, SoundCloud, or iTunes. I think they're still on iTunes. Maybe not.
Oh, they are.
Oh, they are? Okay. But mostly we...
Jason just shows up and warms up the microphone. He doesn't care how like the cogs and the machinery works behind the scenes.
It just, we press record and somehow it gets posted, and that's all I care about. But make sure to go listen on iTunes or SoundCloud is our biggest poster after the initial recording on iDobe Radio. So after Tuesdays, check our Instagram and our Twitter and everything, our Facebook at My Body Sings. That's without the electric, My Body Sings on Twitter and everything, and we'll post the SoundCloud episodes. And go to our website, mybodysingselectric.com, to write us email or get music or look up tour dates or anything like that. So what's up, everybody?
Hey, buddy.
This week, we've got some friends on from, you guys are from San Jose, California,
I think. That's correct.
Your band's name is called Curious Quail. We've got Mike and Joey. What's up, guys?
Hey, how's it going?
Hey there.
Hell yeah. We're Skyping in this one, which is, we just like... ran through a bunch of red tape for that.
It's science.
Technology made our lives better, I swear.
So I had a question for you guys.
So hold on. Before we get into anything, their band's called Curious Quail. They've got curiousquail.com, or follow them on Twitter at Curious Quail, which I think the actual name is Vampirous Quail or something on Twitter right now. What is that?
Yeah, we went a little Halloween, the Simpsons treehouse of horror with the credit sequence, all the names get all Halloween-y. Never did it before, so fuck it, and went for it this year.
Cool.
That's a funny idea.
You guys are Simpsons fans?
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Joey's essentially Homer, awesome. So.
So, yeah, you...
Mine is just the balding.
You guys are a cool, like, I don't know how to describe it. It's like indie rock music, just really good. Like, sounds good acoustic, sounds good full band, all that stuff is what my impression is.
Awesome, thank you. Yeah, that's probably the easiest way. We get a lot of weird descriptions. Like, we've been called, like, folk rock. We've been called, like, electropop, so.
Have you got adult contemporary?
Never, and I think that would be the moment where we just need to stop what we're doing.
Just hang it up.
Like, see,
the thing about adult contemporary is I really don't have any idea what that means.
Yeah.
I think it means rock and roll with a little less rock. Is that just, like, top 40? Is it top 40? I don't know.
Well, I mean, like, I would say, like, Dan Fogelberg and, like, you know.
Steve Winwood.
So, yeah, that, you know.
Maybe does he do Sledgehammer? Paul Simon is definitely adult contemporary.
Sledgehammer's Peter Gabriel.
Oh, Peter Gabriel.
Yeah. But Peter Gabriel would count.
More like Peter Gabriel.
I think you could fit John Mayer in there, too, maybe. I don't know.
Whatever it is, you have to be 18 or older to be an adult. So, whoever's an adult contemporary.
For you, kids. It's not for kids. Okay. If you're 17 right now, driving in your car through San Jose, California, and some Peter Gabriel's on the radio, you better fucking turn it off.
Yeah.
You're not old enough to enjoy that.
It's the equivalent of going to a porn site and seeing the thing that says you must be 18 or older, click this to enter the site.
And you're like, damn, I can't.
You can't enter. Do it, dude. Back
can't
up.
Go.
Back. Where's the back button?
So I wanted to ask you guys this just because I think it's funny, but I think we're talking now just because we have been friends on Twitter for a long time.
That's pretty much the, yeah.
Have we ever met in real life? Like, I just,
no.
All of a sudden it was like, this band from California is just sending funny jokes to us, like, all the time.
Yeah.
it's kind of like this weird, like, 4 degrees of separation, because you guys have played with our buddy Joey's band, Bel Noir.
Joey Lancaster, shout out. Shout out to Joey. We talked about him, like, last podcast, too, maybe.
Last podcast, because
he's killing it.
Do you guys know the band Idle Hands?
Just from the last podcast.
Oh, okay, yeah. Because they knew us from them, and they're all in the same, you know, Bay Area type of area. So
it's pretty insular like that. And then, like, on top of that, you guys just did you guys have played with the Epilogues, and we're like oddly connected to them through Night Riots, who used to be called PK,
nice.
And we used to play with them a lot. So.
Yeah,
hell yeah! Shout out Night Riots and the Epilogues.
I thought didn't Night Riots didn't they just strike gold by getting some national rotation on radio?
Yeah, they like started with like Alt Nation on Sirius XM, and then they just pretty much fucking nailed it everywhere. They are killing it.
Yeah, awesome.
They that's
really
what,
cool live too.
I don't know which came first, but they were on basically the entire Warped Tour circuit last year.
Yep.
And then I don't know if that got them the attention from whoever they needed it from to go do a radio push or whatever, but they're slaying it now.
Shout out Warped Tour.
Which is a funny thing, because we want to be on Warped Tour. And if that were to happen, maybe it would propel us to stardom. I just honestly want to be able to afford to wipe my ass.
Wow.
This music stuff.
Wow. More, you know, two ply toilet paper instead of, you know, the napkins you got from Starbucks.
Can a motherfucker get another ply is all I'm saying.
Hold on, dude. Let me just say this. It's free to just go to the sink and splash some water, and then you're good for the day.
Wow, that's like a poor man's bidet.
It's
right
free
there.
Though, you know.
It's definitely free. I agree with
the
you.
Way my
it is actually not
is
free
up,
because
water
costs.
Yeah, but I'm at Chipotle, and you know, I don't. I already bought a burrito.
Okay,
so.
wait, hold the fuck on. Why, if you live in a place with illegal Pete's, why would you go to Chipotle?
Well, we're talking
like
on tour. Because
Chipotle was also from here, maybe, though.
Yeah, Chipotle started in Denver as well, so it's kind of a local favorite.
We're the kings of burrito restaurants.
We invented the burrito here in Denver. You guys heard of Big City Burrito? We're that big city.
Qdoba's from here, too.
Shit.
Yep, there you go.
Yeah.
Qdoba, too.
You can thank us for all your burritos, America.
And Chipotle might be, you know, a little better. Well, they're just different, you know?
Yeah, they're different.
Depends on what mood you're
in. I think they're
in.
Different, and I like them both.
All right, so before we get
but
going.
Shout out Illegal Pete's, though, because they do more for the community here
definitely.
Than Chipotle does.
Yeah,
hands down.
Definitely.
So.
That we know about, at least.
Before we get going too far into it, I want to talk about Curious Quail a little bit. So we're friends because of the fourth degree of, you know, knowing people thing, like you said, or whatever that's called, but I want you guys to just give us a lowdown, a rundown on your band. Like, how'd you get started? What's your goals? Like, what have you done so far? What are you looking at doing in the future and all that stuff?
All right. So I'm Mike. I'm the singer, the guitarist, and the Game Boy guy. I write music with a Nintendo Game Boy. And then we, like, layer everything else on top of it, which is violin and a fuck ton of fuzzy guitar, because, like, I was super into the 90s, like, alternative wall of sound.
Hell yeah, shout out to that.
And then Joey dropped some drums on top of it, and little known fact, Joey, our drummer, is he's not a drummer, he's a musician.
Yay.
Oh, he's one of those.
What?
Yeah, I know, right? He actually knows more music theory than I do. So, like, on our last record, he, like, brought timpani into the studio and, like, all this, like, crazy orchestral percussion and shit. It was fucking rad. But yeah, so we're a 5-piece, and the other 3 members of the band are all music teachers, so their schedule is insane when we're home, and they're, you know, lots of getting everybody in the same room is you know, a premium, as I'm sure you guys understand.
Oh yeah.
So are you guys definitely gonna play this this fucking podcast for your kids?
Oh, totally. Totally.
Fuck yeah.
But Yeah, so I started the thing in 2008 as a solo project. It was just me and a guitar and like a loop pedal and the Game Boy and a laptop. And then
which was impressive to watch. I got to see him when he was still doing it that way, which is kind of why I ended up jumping in. I was playing in a band with Mike at the time, and that band kind of dissolved, and myself and another member jumped in on Mike's project, and we kind of rounded out, you know, the lineup and got it going, and it was just nice to hear these songs that sounded initially very cool, but it was, you know, one person trying to make it all happen to sort of flesh it out a little bit more. It was a lot of fun.
I distinctly remember Joey telling me, oh yeah, you need a drummer. So yeah, that's how that happened. And then Alan, our violinist, joined, and that kind of helped change the sound, because I had like sampled strings and like loops and shit like that going, and he was able to come in and, you know, give it like life. And so then we the first two records were just me, a lot of DIY kitchen recording, unplug the fridge, track vocals, plug the fridge back in so the food doesn't go bad. And then the third record, we finally were like, okay, no, it's no longer just me and my live members. Like, we're all going to be like an actual 5-piece band. And so we did a Kickstarter for that record and raised a fuckload more money than we thought we were going to. And then now we're kind of in it to win it.
Well, okay, so that wraps it around nicely. So you guys just decided to be a 5-piece kind of for this last record. You're like, screw the hired guns thing and the singer songwriter, like, you know, I mean, now we're a full 5-piece band.
And that's when you did
your Kickstarter. And there's two things I want to talk about. First is the Game Boy thing, which is super interesting to me. I still don't know how you just bring a Game Boy and make music out of it. And then number two, I want to get into the Kickstarter thing, because I know that you guys blew that thing away.
Cool, yeah. So the Game Boy, I don't know, have you guys ever heard of the term chiptune?
No. Nope, not until you just told me it like a little bit before we press record. But
okay,
what is that?
Cool. So basically it's using the Game Boy's sound chip to make music. And so I've got a cartridge called LSDJ that you plug into the Game Boy, like, you know, an old school, like, you know, brick gray.
Like the
Game
old
Boy.
Gray square one.
Yep, that's it's yeah. funny because you can use this with a bunch of, like, you know, the Game Boy Advances and like the newer
Game
ones.
Game Boy
but
Color.
You can use it with the color, but like the old one has the best sound chip, so they're kind of like sought after.
Interesting. And I have a few of those, like somewhere at my mom's house, man.
Dude, you could probably eBay those and just like eBay them as is, but then include chiptune in the description, and they will fucking sell.
Wow, how much do you think those go for then?
You can still get like original price, like $89 to $100 for them.
Wow, this is amazing.
Yeah, Jason, we're going to Mexico.
No, you go to flea markets, man, because like people don't want this shit.
At the same time, I kind of want to keep that old brick of a Game Boy around just because it's cool.
Yeah, because
you might actually want to play it on tour. You know?
Yeah. All right, so it's you put a cartridge, the LSD in. Shout out to LSD real quick.
LSDJ.
LSDJ.
So do you you can use it through a MIDI controller or? Do you run it from the actual Game Boy?
You run it from the Game Boy. And so it basically runs as like a step sequencer. So you can program in notes and what it plays and a tempo and a BPM and all that stuff. I have my Game Boy is modded so that there's a quarter inch stereo out and a backlit screen so that I can like actually like see it in the dark.
You fucking nerd.
Oh my God. No, we are awesome. Such fucking nerds.
That's
awesome. No idea. Yeah.
That is one of the coolest things I've heard, honestly, in a while.
So it, you know.
Peace out, Nick.
Right
Nick.
Channel will. Oh, later, Nick.
Nick just left for work. So now on the MBSC side is Brandon, myself, and Ben. So, and Mike and Joey from Curious Quail. All right, let's continue.
Rock and roll. But yeah, so the right channel will just be like a track, and the left channel will go out to the crowd, and you know, basically just be like another instrument in the mix. And so the Game Boy plays along with us.
Yeah. Although, you know, you guys like the awful truth stuff. The awful truth of it is that Mike has to be very judicious about how much he uses because it's all at one volume level. You know, you can't while it's going out to the audience, it has to be used where it's really appropriate.
I would imagine
the band has to balance the volume around
Yeah, I would imagine it's mostly used for like leads and like a lot of the cool leads or something that a game.
Yeah, and in some cases, like I'll like layer it up, like it'll double like a rhythm guitar part or something like that, just to kind of give it that extra texture.
Yeah,
You know, a lot of arpeggios.
Through, say like a pedal board and run it through a volume pedal and their delay and all kinds of that.
Yeah,
stuff
there's
on it.
Definitely options for that, but then it's more like in your face stuff that I have to do while I'm doing other things, like being the lead singer and playing guitar.
Oh yeah,
so,
you don't have time.
Yeah, it's
there definitely are some chiptune artists out there that take this to like other levels and do different things. For us, it's more like a keyboard where it's sort of another instrument, and it sort of fills that role. Whereas you get bands like probably the most well known is Onomatoguchi. And they basically, it's sort of the backdrop of the entire music, like most of what they play, at least their older stuff.
Yeah, they've got like a Nintendo on stage with them, and they've like play guitar on top of it. Like it's fucking crazy.
Yeah. Sweet. Yeah, like one of my thoughts right now is like as soon as like I get home tonight, I'm going to YouTube chiptune and just see the nerds go off on the
Game Boy. Amazing.
There is much nerdery to be had and seen.
Also, are you guys fans of the Postal Service?
Oh yeah, totally.
Yes. See, I thought they were like they capitalized on some of the video game type of sounds in their whole album.
Some of it, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think they pulled a Game Boy out for it. They just kind of did that sound on a synthesizer, and that was it. So this is like the whole next level.
There's an entire like community dedicated to this that I kind of had no idea that people were doing until after I started it, because when I was first doing it, I was using an old Atari 800 and just making it make sounds and then pitch bending that in like Pro Tools. And then I discovered that I could do it all on a Game Boy, and I was like, oh, fuck yeah, that's a hell of a lot easier.
Are you guys big fans of, there's been like whole orchestras that play old video game music as like full orchestras?
Yeah, so, you know, we're like you said earlier, we are nerds, tried and true. we've been parts of some of the local festivals around here, and also there's this really great group on the East Coast, the MagFest folks, and they basically we've had the opportunity to play with a whole sort of a plethora of different bands that do everything from chip tunes to music covers, like the Mini Bosses. They do Nintendo covers, Bit Brigade. They do live runs, so they'll do a speed run. Let's say
I've seen some speed run stuff. Yeah,
like
sometimes
so Contra,
I'd look at that.
For example. That's like an unbeatable game for a lot of people. This guy plays it and plays it super fast, and the band plays the music while Noah, the guy who's an amazing player, plays the game. And
on stage, they're a five-piece band, and instead of singing, the fifth guy is playing the game on a projector.
That's fucking so nerdy. Oh my god,
and, I love it. So wait, what if he dies? Does the band start the song over?
They'll play the dying music if there's dying music, but it's rare. That's the cool thing. It's one of those things. You're watching the guy play and amazed that the guy can play the game, and then you're listening to the music, and these guys are phenomenal musicians in their own right. And then so it's just this whole experience. It's great.
Two things.
We actually got the opportunity. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. But I just recently watched a video of a violinist who he was playing to somebody else playing Mario, and
the white suit, right?
Yeah. He was playing all the music and everything, and every time he got a power up, he would boop, 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 boop on his thing, and then when he died, it boom, 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 and like he sunk down to the tunnel and was he was just playing everything to the T on just his violin. It was so awesome.
It's amazing.
Another thing is
our violinist Alan is working on that.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Another thing is I saw a speed run of one of my favorite games on the 64 was 007, GoldenEye.
Oh, nice.
And they get just so Brandon and you guys probably know Mike and Joey, but Brandon and Ben, these guys are so nerdy about speed runs. Like they have competitions with old classic games, and they've like sat there and meticulously found out the best way to complete the level and complete the whole game. And a little well-known fact about GoldenEye is if you point the camera down into the left or the right to where you're like sidestepping the whole time, you could run a little bit faster than if you're just looking straight up and run. So all these speeds, it's so nerdy. You could go on YouTube and watch this guy GoldenEye speed run. all you see is the floor and his feet, and he's just moving and moving. But because it's fast, and all these nerds are like, whoa.
Yeah. I was going to say before, we actually were really honored. We got called up to open for at one of the venues around here in San Francisco for Proto Men. And that's sort of taking a different sidestep on the nerd thing. Basically, their music is inspired by Mega Man, but not necessarily actual Mega Man music.
It's like a full-on rock opera performance, but it's all about Mega Man. And there's like seven of them on stage, and they have like Mega Man helmets and shit. Like it's.
And by the way, these guys are not from around. I mean, like those guys are from Tennessee. Yeah. Bit Brigade's from Georgia,
Athens.
I think.
Yeah, Athens, Georgia.
Athens, Georgia. So. Like yeah, these guys get flown in to do these really nerdy events, but they're just amazing musicians anyway. Plus, they're doing these really cool nerdy things. So Wow. Yeah, there's whole festivals, and actually we'll probably talk a little bit later about this. But we'll be going down to a festival coming up in January, in LA that's based around some of that nerdy stuff too.
Sweet, that's so cool that you guys got to get in on that group and. That's kind of
it's
your
fun,
own little
like,
world.
Because, you know, we get the nerd side of it, but then, like, you know, we also can be our regular, like, you know, indie rock band self. And it's nice to have a show, like, you know, two shows back to back, and one of them is like, okay, we're playing to our nerd base, and the next one is like by our local alt-rock radio station where we're, like, playing to a totally different crowd. So
Yeah.
So that leads into, the next big discussion is you guys... really kicked ass on a Kickstarter. So I just want to hear the story behind, you know, how you got started and how you even just set it up that in a way that it was successful. Like what kicked it up to that point?
Right. So we were going to record our third record, and we were going to do it together as a band instead of me just like multi-tracking everything and programming drums and stuff. And I was shopping a bunch of different studios, and I don't know if you guys are familiar with the punk band called The Matches.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so John, the guitarist, he's a Bay Area. Yeah, I mean, they're a Bay Area band.
Oh, cool.
But he had just opened a recording studio, and he emailed me, and he was like, hey, are you guys interested in recording at my new studio? And we were like, okay, let's do a Kickstarter, let's raise some money, and let's record with John. Like, you know, we knew John through a couple of other different bands, and so we were like, okay, what's the absolute minimum that we'd need to track for X number of days, blah, blah, blah. We'll throw in some of our, you know, personal cash, but all right, 6,000. Yeah, we can totally do this. And then we hit that in the first week. And then we ended up with over $10,000 by the end of the campaign.
That's insane.
Which, it totally blew us away. And I think the biggest takeaway was that we had more people were more interested than we honestly thought they would be. There was a couple of people that we were like, okay, yeah, we can guarantee a certain number of friends and fans and family members and stuff, but Kickstarter featured us on their front page for like almost the entire campaign because they really liked our video. It was pretty crazy.
How did the donations break down as far as like were there fewer people donating more money or a lot of people donating a little bit or a good mix? Or
I think the average donation was about the 25 to 35 range.
Yeah, something like that. Because, you want to charge for the CD a little bit more than what it's actually what it would cost, like a show or whatever. But you try to throw in things that'll make it worth it. Aside from obviously you're helping the band make this CD happen. So most people wanted a physical CD. Some people just would pay for the minimum, which would have been the
digital download.
But
a lot of people went for shirts. We had like very specific, we tried to brand everything.
What were the bullet points and the price points for every reward that you sent? Did you guys get up huge?
It was like
a private pizza party with the band. I know a lot of people do stuff like
we
that.
We had some of that stuff. And oddly enough, our violinist and our bassist, Erin, she is a huge D&D nerd. So one of the rewards was a D&D game with the band. And somebody went for it. And, you know, like, I think that was one of our higher tier rewards.
But how much was that one for?
God, well, that one was, what,
can't
it
remember.
Was like 500 or 600, I think. It was something like that. Nice. And then we had another one that was like a private, you know, like dinner party. You know, we cook for you. We do a private show, et cetera, et cetera. And that happened out at this crazy ass farm in like the middle of rural California. It was just a lot of really. We were kind of just trying to think outside the box in terms of what we could do other than just. Here's a new CD. Here's a specific to the Kickstarter shirt. Here's
yeah. Just once, I want to see a band do something like this, and to one of the single guys in the band, just have $1,000 straight up.
Just
guy or girl, you can have sex with them. just sell your. You know, you're trying to sell yourself. You know, so I mean, that wouldn't that be great if you saw that?
I don't know.
I think that would probably have to be Indiegogo because Kickstarter is kind of specific about.
Oh, they've got rules.
All these rules.
Not down with those rules.
Yeah, there's a lot. Like we learned. I know Mike did a lot of pre research and stuff, but we learned a lot of stuff on the back end. Like, you know, Kickstarter won't let you do a lot of. They won't let you do a lot of things as. As rewards, unless they're specifically under certain guidelines.
No lifetime. We had one that was like, a, you know, a free, like lifetime pass to our shows.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You, know, you get the shirt, but you get, you know, basically guest listed at any show, anywhere, ever. And they were like, no lifetime anything. You have to change the wording on this, or that's not a tangible item or something. There was a bunch of like really, really weird ass backwards
probably
stuff.
Because if someone bought a lifetime thing and then 20 years later they're still capitalizing on that lifetime, Kickstarter would have wanted some of that back too, you know, for them somehow. I don't know.
But I think, you know, to anybody who's looking to do Kickstarter, the things to consider, you know, prep, you know, definitely prep ahead of time. Consider that I think most people would say this about their own Kickstarters anyway. Unfortunately, it's always true. It's always going to cost more than you think it's going to cost.
Totally. So, $10,000 and we went over budget on recording. And we had stretch goals that, you know, after the first week, it was like, oh shit, we hit our goal. Okay. What else can we do to try and, you know, we have another 20 days, right? Like what else do we do? And our guitarist at the time came up with this fun idea of why don't we match every dollar that we make in the second week with a push-up on camera. So we did that. And it hurt like hell. And some people canceled their pledges to pledge more so that we'd have to do more push-ups.
Our favorite thing to watch, though, was our bassist, who happens to be a female, was like, I can't do push-ups. I'll do jumping jacks instead. Or not jump rope. And what was it, like five for every
It was five for every push-up.
She could have done the.
Like five,
they're literally called girl push-ups, where you put your knees on the floor. You know, come on.
It was kind of amazing to watch. Like we'd go out to rehearsal, and then in between, like you know, we'd go out for a break between parts of our practice, and she'd bust out the jump rope and start doing her jump rope. She's like, "I got 300 more to do." Oh, jeez.
It was pretty zany.
It's intense.
But so we. Blew past our budget, and we had added stretch goals to try and make more money because it was like, okay, cool, if we hit 8,000, then we can fund a music video, right? If we hit 10,000, then we could do something else. And we let the backers vote because we were like, okay, we can either do like an additional like acoustic EP, or we could do like a behind the scenes like documentary about the recording process. And people voted for the documentary, so we did that. And everything on our Kickstarter we got done. But a lot of it we ended up having to like either handle ourselves, like our, you know, the music video, Joey ended up hand animating the entire thing, doing a stop motion video.
Wow.
What's
the beautiful, but what's the song and video?
The song is called Instant Gratification.
Oh yeah. Okay. I like that song.
And it's
I haven't watched the video, but I like that song a lot.
We'll tweet
it. Check it out.
Check our Twitter. My Body Sings. We'll have it up there.
Yeah. We'll tweet that.
Yeah, there's also a 20-minute documentary, about 20 minutes, I guess, that our guitarist basically put together because initially we were going to have someone else edit it all together. We were taking video of everything we were doing in the studio along the way. And he ended up having to edit it together, which luckily we've got a lot of very talented people in the band who are talented beyond just being musicians. So, you know, looks really, really cool.
That's something I've been wanting to get into. I really want to go get a GoPro or something easy and just start making little videos. You know, you could just plug it into iMovie or some kind of, editor and make cool little...
The music video that we did, like I had a free app called iMotion on, iMotion on my iPhone. And then I just threw it into to iMovie because that was on my computer already. And turned out pretty good for basically, you know, stuff I already had.
Like our local alt rock radio station, like posted just their website with like, look at this brilliant, you know, animated music video, blah, blah, blah. And like, Joey did it with his iPhone.
I love to hear that everyone in the band just got totally on board and were totally contributing. Like that's the kind of, for any band to really kick it up to the next level, you need all cylinders firing basically. So
yeah. No, I think cool Mike and I have both been in bands in the past where, it's not that, you know, someone's holding up, someone's doing all the work, someone's doing all the, you know, either it's physical labor moving in gear or whether it's, you know, just basically doing everything. And I think the important thing is for everyone, we kind of discovered this, especially with that recording that album was you need everyone to feel like they're part of it. And to do that, everyone needs to contribute equally as much as possible.
The gear thing really, pardon the pun, grinds my gears. Because I don't care who, even if you don't do shit in the band, if you roll up to the venue, everybody I don't care if it's the drums or if it's your equipment or anything, just grab something and go into the place, you know what I mean?
Yep, right.
And sometimes one of your boys is going to be getting drunk or talking to a girl at the bar and like, you just kind of know, oh, I'll get him tonight. Like, I'll get all of his stuff. I'll make sure he's set. And then, then they got you one of those nights when you're, you know, throwing up in the parking lot because you got too drunk.
I'm cleaning up at the on the stage a lot when Mike and, you know, one or two of the other folks that are up front head over to the merch table to, you know, meet and greet the fans. Nobody knows who the drummer is. So
exactly. Yeah.
I just hang back and I'm like, I'll clean up your thing. I'll get your amp off, you know.
Yeah. When Brandon goes straight to the merch table, I always like, I just want to, grab as much as I can and take the lights and just take care of it.
Yeah. But yeah,
that really grinds my gear. Like I couldn't be in a band where someone just doesn't load up all the time. Fuck yeah.
So
or where it's like, I'll help you, and you are way too drunk to help me with anything right now. You need to go sober up, actually.
Yeah.
Please don't pick up my app.
Yeah.
Now you guys are stuck in the mode of, how much work do you have left to start getting out Kickstarter rewards?
Oh, the Kickstarter is all pretty much all done at this point.
I think there's like one thing left that we have to do, and we're waiting on a backer. Somebody moved out of state who had one of the prizes, so we're technically off the hook. Like we are technically done with the entire process, but it took a while, and it was like a full time job. And I think that's one of the biggest things that we could tell anyone that wants to do like any kind of like crowdfunding or like if you're looking at like Patreon or something like that, like. Any kind of, raising money like this, it is a full-time job that you have to spend a lot of your soul on.
Yeah.
Is Kickstarter...
Not to mention that Mike got kind of stuck with the back end of it, which is whoever signs up for it and however you do it, you're going to be paying taxes.
Oh, yeah. We're an LLC now, but we weren't at the time when we started the campaign. Uh-oh. So, yeah, I got a huge, huge tax bill that year. Plus, we did the Kickstarter toward the end of the year and then had split fees. So half of it, you know, if you raise money and you spend all the money that year, you're great. But if you have some left over, then it's just this. It was this massive clusterfuck.
Yeah,
yeah.
Doing taxes. If you're at a level where you're bringing in any decent money, it might be a good idea to have like a friend who's an accountant or something like that. Because yep. I've been doing the taxes for the band. I'm just winging it. I think I'm doing it right, but I'm not sure. But. The government.
You may not want to publicize that.
Hold on. I'd like. All right, NSA. Fuck off, IRS. All right, kiss my ass.
Your chances. in reality,
eat my shit, all right? We're fucking trying over here.
You got a better chance of winning the lottery than getting audited. So I feel like yeah, I'm doing my...
That is a good point.
Famous last words.
I'm doing my due diligence, and I track... I do accounting in that I track all the purchases we make on our band card, and I categorize them, and et cetera, et cetera. But then I think just the tax burden ends up falling on just me, even though we are an LLC.
Honestly, the only thing I worry about is because, you know, we want to save all of our receipts for gas or, you know, even food or anything like that. The only thing that bothers me is I believe it's being done correctly. I just think that we probably should be getting more for taxes or paying less for taxes.
Maybe.
That's where I think.
Here's what's great about, since we're getting into tax stuff, but being in a band, there's an amazing write-off for your mileage.
Yeah.
And when you tour, you drive such an absurd amount that the tax benefits for all those miles you drive usually end up like evening you out. You're usually actually don't end up owing any money at the end of the year.
But technically, yeah. I mean, if you really wanted to get nerdy about taxes and being in a band, every single time you grab tacos for the band on the way to band practice or every, you could stretch it so far. Yeah.
It's perfect.
As long as you don't buy beer.
Yeah.
don't buy beer.
If there's alcohol on the receipt, then it can't be used as a tax write-off.
God, if you could use that for a tax write-off, we'd be so good.
Oh, even if we just recycled all the cans and bottles that we go through, think we can.
But you know what? We're doing the homeless guy out back.
Homeless Joe back here. He that's his main source of income.
Main source.
Hundreds of beer bottles every
week. That's the thing. The three other members are all teachers, so they all work independently as music teachers, and so they all write off a whole ton. So they're kind of already doing that themselves too. So
awesome.
So yeah, you guys, the summer's got to be your like grind time then, since three of your members are just getting paid for doing nothing pretty much
in the summer.
The number of their students that just like vanish during the summer, it's like ridiculous.
Yeah, no, they're independent. They're not working like out of school or anything. They're working, I mean, at their sort of their respective studios.
Oh, yeah.
But still for them, summer is kind of a bummer because, all the kids wander off and, makes it tough. But it eases our scheduling, that's for sure.
I think you just wrote your – that's the next name of your guys' next single, Summer is a Bummer.
Summer's a Bummer. Sample some Lana Del Rey.
All right, so tell us some more about this festival in L.A. that you're going to be doing in January.
Oh, dude, I'm stoked. It's called Freak Fest, and it's spelled with a Q, like frequency. And it's the fifth one, I guess – technically, it's the fifth year. It's put on by a group called 8-Bit LA, and it happens at this place called The Smell in downtown Los Angeles. It's like the most punk as fuck venue I've ever seen in my life. Like,
it's called The Smell.
That's pretty punk.
Dude, it's amazing. It's DIY. It's vegan, straight edge. Like, it's pretty fucking hardcore. So it's a three-night festival of every band on the bill either uses old video game or computer hardware as like part of their sound or like exclusively uses them to make their music. So like, there's bands like us where it's like we're a rock band, but we've also got a Game Boy in it. There's like a dude that's like he just has like a mixer and Game Boys and just like essentially does like crazy dubstep shit.
And he's also doomed to be alone for the rest of his life.
Fucking, so we played with him last year at Freak Fest, and he's called Boa Constructor. He's from Seattle. And he showed up the day of the show, and then I think it was on Craigslist, hired some like, I don't know if they were strippers or what, but basically got these ladies to show up in like go-go dancer outfits as like part of his stage show. And like, okay, cool. Like that is what it is. But then he also had a fucking puppet show. There was like someone set up off to the side with like this crazy marionette, like, over the top, like Swedish fucking puppets while he's like up there DJing with his Game Boy. It was so surreal. I love it.
And he had this beautiful giant like gold chain that said LSDJ. So the LSDJ program is basically what most of the chiptune folks use. So he had this giant like LSDJ chain, and it was, it was entertaining, to say the least.
I love this
guy.
When
is this festival? I need to be there.
It's January 15th through the 17th.
I will see you in L.A. You hear that, listeners? I'll see the rest of you in L.A. too, because everybody's going.
It's a nice
little
venue called The Smell.
Yeah, it's called The Smell.
That would be great. Seriously, maybe we can hit up our booking agent and plan a show around there. And
dude, yeah, because we're going to be in town the whole weekend. So, I mean, like, hey, if you guys want to... You guys want to play some LA show that weekend? We can definitely sync up.
We should definitely play it next time we're in anywhere in Cali. Really, yeah. Like you know, Bay Area especially.
So this is something I've always we don't get to connect with a whole lot of bands that are outside of say I don't know Colorado Midwest. We don't get to meet a whole lot of bands unless it's through the podcast. So being in California, there's so much more sort of music industry infrastructure than where we come from. Even though Denver is a pretty awesome community to grow up playing music in, you just don't have the same presence of like labels or music supervisors or publishers or whatever it is.
You know, I'd say yes and no, because like a vast majority of that is all based down in LA. And, you know, from San Jose, we're like, 40, 50 minutes outside of San Francisco. So, like, we're a good 6.5 hours away from L.A. And San Francisco's music community is it's getting better now. But, like, for a while, it was just kind of stagnated. And
it was the Grateful Dead and then
every week and then a music
40 years
closing.
Of nothing. And then Curious Quail. You guys are bringing the scene back.
I think the other thing that you can't discount that I honestly think both San Francisco and San Jose sometimes struggle with is it's less about having that infrastructure and more about having venues that are catering to as much as possible all age events and also fans, like just people that'll go out to shows. I honestly think that, you know, we've talked to friends and people in like Nashville and other places, and there's tons of venues and people go out expecting to go listen to live music. Mm-hmm. And around here, sometimes it's difficult to, you know, convince people because they've got other things going on or because they're just, you know, they're tired from their really long day of being Silicon Valley awesome people. And, you know.
Because
and
like, in traffic, it takes 2.5 hours.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah,
that's a big
one. It's pretty bad.
San Francisco.
Well, and like San Francisco, Silicon Valley, like the whole Bay Area is, I think, one of the most expensive places to live in the country right now.
Yeah, I think it is maybe.
The like average one-bedroom apartment is something like $2,600 a month.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And so like, people are like working to survive and, you know, working an 8-hour job that's like you said, like an hour or two traffic, commute in either direction. So the last thing they want to do is go to a fucking, you know, rock show on like a Thursday night or something.
We've been lucky enough to be hashtag blessed with a pretty awesome community out
Don't
here.
Use that hashtag around me, okay?
A pretty awesome community of listeners and a radio station that really supports locals and just a solid group of probably, there's probably 800 or 1,000 people that go to one or two local shows a month. And
that's fucking awesome.
You get to know just the people that are regulars. They become sort of, you know, part of the family and community going on with what you're doing with music and all your friends who are also playing music are doing. And it's pretty rad to be a part of that. And we're trying to, I don't know. I don't want to say that we've been coddled, but we've come up in a music scene that's just so supportive that we're trying to take what we're doing and doing well in Denver and try to expand it out to other cities. And it's an interesting thing. So like, trying to get to Salt Lake City, like we don't know if anything like that exists to tap into.
So there's two things I would say to that. One is, as much as we can, we try to use the term community because, really, honestly, like scene, it has sort of a negative connotation to some people. Like community, we tend to be where, and we're really trying to kind of help build that back up. There's a really great group that does that, and I'm not sure if they have a Denver location. So there's a group called Balanced Breakfast. It started up in San Francisco. They branched out community sections to – there's got one in San Jose. They got one in – but they've got some like LA –
Toronto,
Boston,
Boston, Nashville. Yeah.
I've never heard of anything like that in Denver.
Yeah, I think there might be a Denver chapter. Like after the podcast, I'll look it up and see if I can send it over to you. But cool. It was basically just, you know, a graphic designer and an audio engineer were like, hey, let's hang out at 8 a.m. on a Thursday morning and talk about music. And then a bunch of other people started showing up. And
literally started because the two of them would go to shows and afterwards they'd get breakfast in the morning and like chat about the shows and how awesome it was, and wanted to kind of bring other people into the community, both musicians and fans. And it's, yeah, they've just been kind of growing it, you know, with the only real goal in mind being to sort of help educate and further and build that community, so that if you're a balanced breakfast band in this area and you go to Boston, that you could have a connection there, someone that could hook you up. Wow. You know, especially if you're kind of, you're not on someone's, you know, you don't have a tour manager or a band bookie type, you know, booker or something.
Yeah. I love that.
That's really cool.
Maybe we could spearhead the chapter in Denver.
Oh yeah,
I'll put you in touch with Stefan, who's in charge of it. Like, I'll put you guys in touch.
There's people here that would love to.
It's pretty fucking rad. And like the first year that they did it, it got big enough to where they were able to get their own South by Southwest showcase of just balanced breakfast bands. And at the time, it was just Bay Area. So in Austin, it was just like just showcase of all these Bay Area bands. It was pretty crazy.
That's great.
One thing I always like to ask bands, what's your rehearsal schedule like? Just real quick, like as a band and then individually, like what's your practice schedules look like?
Kind of depends. Usually it's Monday, Wednesday nights for us because everyone's, you know, working, you know, provided everyone's schedule like lines up. But you know, get in a little bit of warm up, and then it's we try to be very efficient with the rehearsal. So it's like if we're playing a specific show or need to run a specific set, or you know, maybe it's a pre-pro rehearsal, so we need to make sure that all the recording gear is set up, because you know, kind of doing a similar thing to you guys, you know, making sure that we pre-pro it all first in our studio before we take it to the actual studio and do recording. Though I think you guys are doing. You guys are doing more of like the actual recording yourself, right?
Yeah, we also do the pre-pro too, though, like with just raw recording.
We're sort of always in that mode. So, I mean, if we're working on a new song, we like to have everything in the room mic'd up so that we can just run a live run through of whatever song we're working on.
We'll literally use the same mics we're talking on right now for just press and record on a song. And that's our pre-pro.
And it really depends. I mean, sometimes we'll work on the song in like as a band, and then like I'll go in on a day off and try to record the drums in a real, you know, raw but good enough kind of way, and then send that file over to Mike, and then kind of he'll layer on top his stuff, and then we'll send it off to someone else, and Mike will say, you know, he'll say, hey Alan, we need, you know, violin, here's kind of what I'm thinking, and he'll kind of throw something on top, and then we'll work through it in rehearsals. So
there's a fair amount offline as well.
Yeah.
So that way when we're all in the room together, that we're making sure that we're like maximizing everyone's time.
Yeah. It really is all about, you know, rehearsal as rehearsal, and practice is something you do on your own as much as possible. You know, again, it goes back to three of the members, you know, teach for a living. So they play their instruments frequently, you know, on a given day. And, you know, I think Mike and I get to our instruments as often as we can.
Yeah, I mean, so the other dudes aren't around right now, but you guys individually.
Let's talk shit about them.
How often do you
fucking
guys?
Fucking violent. Let me tell you about violinists. Yeah. Oh my God.
Douchebag.
Sorry, Ben, I cut you off.
Yeah, just since you guys can speak for yourselves here, how often do you guys practice on your own, like during the week?
Less than I'd like to, honestly.
Yeah, that's like, I think that's everyone's answer, but.
Yeah. I mean, I'm lucky these days. Right now I'm in a place where I'm getting in there like once, twice a week other than rehearsal. But, you know, ideally more than that for sure.
This kind of goes about the violinist, because everyone knows this douchebag who practices. I feel like violinists are kind of like this, which is the following. The guy who actually does and has time to and does practice a couple hours a day. You know, I'm running my scales. but I still don't practice as much as I'd like to.
Oh, fuck God. You. You're fucking practicing every day.
On the head, though. On the head for ours. Part of it is he's actually finishing up a music degree. He kind of got around it. He's been playing for a really long time, but it's one of those things where through a series of unfortunate events, he didn't get to around to finishing his college degree till I think this year he'll be all done with it.
Well, that's pretty rock
and
roll.
Yeah, he's practicing a lot. Yeah, and then he plays a lot of, you know, gigs, and he does a lot of side projects. So it'll be like he won't even tell us half the time because we don't, you know, it's just there's too many things to keep track of. But all of a sudden, we'll see on social media somewhere a picture of him playing in a park somewhere with a, you know, with a group of other musicians and
with
it's
like a cellist and like an opera group or something.
Yeah, I think it, so. It really kind of is like the violinist thing. You know, they're in such high demand. They're not. You know, you can throw a rock and hit a guitarist or a drummer somewhere, but the violinist, they're going
to
be booked.
Typically in the gutter is where you'll find a guitarist.
Try to find a violinist who can play with a rock band.
We're actually fucking blessed to have Alan because, like, you know, this is a classically trained, like, fucking world-class first chair violinist, concertmaster, who grew up, like, listening to fucking Nirvana and shit. So, you know.
And my point is he'd probably still say, I don't practice as much as
he totally doesn't. He admits it. He like frets. It's fucking
also,
crazy.
Also,
pardon the pun, he frets.
Hey, violins don't have frets, okay?
That's true.
Fretless.
He also try being a band with a violinist in it, a rock band, that doesn't get compared to Yellow Card just for simply being a band
definitely,
with a violinist in it.
Or if there's a picture of an acoustic guitar, like if we did like an acoustic show, it's like, oh, so you guys sound like Dave Matthews. Okay, cool. Got it.
Nope. Yeah.
Not nice. Exactly.
It's so hard to overcome stereotypes.
From a lot of different things, but yeah.
I mean, we're a band with five bearded guys. People just assume we sound like Grizzly Bear or something or some aged pop punk band, which is what we actually sound like.
Yeah. So they're pretty spot on. So
they're right on with us. So we got 5 minutes left here.
I want to talk about Gilmore Girls a little bit real quick.
Oh yes.
Oh man. I'll see you guys next week.
One of the things that got us MBSE and you guys Curious Quail talking on Twitter was just the love for the Gilmore Girls. You know what I mean?
I don't know if I would call it love. I was subjected, and I would put this up there with waterboarding, but I was subjected to watch every episode of Gilmore Girls over like a 3-week span because it was put up on Netflix, and my wife decided she had to watch all of it end to end. And by the end, I don't know. I was talking to a lawyer. I don't want to say anything went anywhere, but I was just having conversations. I was about done with it.
Wow.
Well, I know, Mike. Are you the Gilmore Girls fan?
Oh yeah, totally. I got three older sisters, and they watched the shit out of that when it first aired. So
see,
it
there
was
you
like
go.
Always on in the house.
There you go, sisters. Like my little sister got me into it at first as well, and. At first, it's just like something you see your sisters watching, for me at least, and then you start getting into it, and you're like, oh, Rory's hot,
know.
You know?
Like,
and
when did
and
these
the next
people...
thing you know, you have opinions about who Rory's
oh,
dating.
Oh, hell yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm totally... But, okay, hold on, Brandon. What... I'm a Jess guy myself. Who are you?
You know what? Like, I don't like any of her prospective mates throughout the show, because, like...
They're a bunch of morons, all of them.
They really are. Like,
hold on now. Here's why Jess wins, though, because, yes, he was a moron. You know, he was kind of the token tough guy for Rory and Gilmore Girls.
Right.
But, like, and so they ran their gamut of their relationship, and shit happened, and he got in a fight with Dean and everything, and, like, all this stuff, crazy stuff happened. But then two seasons later, when Jess is completely out of the story, he comes back, and he's looking way sexy, and he's... He authored a book, you know what I mean? And he's just trying to, and he's like, he's got his shit together, you know, but they never really got back together. You know what I mean? And so I feel like if Rory and Jess got together now, it would be awesome.
After the fact. Totally. Yeah. Like post season Jess, like by all means, but like, yeah, Dean was just like, trash. Like,
yeah. He was too perfect. He was too of a boy, you know,
total trash.
Every now and then, like, I like to imagine that the things that the actors went off to do afterwards are, like, actually, like, in canon of the show. So that, like, you know, Dean left the show and changed his name
Supernatural.
And went off to, like, fight vampires and shit. Yeah. And, like, you know, Jess got superpowers and moved to New York.
Heroes.
And, yeah, exactly.
Yep. I love Heroes too.
Here's why does nobody ever have time to inhale on the show? Like, it's just everyone's mouth just open, just pouring out dialogue left and right. I just too much to keep up with for me,
I guess. That's Amy Sherman-Palladino just typing her ass off for everyone's dialogue. And yes, I know the writer's name.
I was gonna drop it, and I was like, I don't
know. Dude,
should I be that guy?
Did you watch any more of that Austin reunion thing that happened earlier?
The thing
this year?
You sent me? Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful.
So the band playing was really, really cool. And I especially like the part where the bassist, I forget his name. Because so there was a band, for everyone listening, there was a band in the story of Gilmore Girls. And, you know, they kind of, I loved it because they kind of went their own way and they kind of started touring and everything. And it was a good band story. I don't think it was too cheesy.
No, but it was actually really well done.
Yeah, and
the music lover in the show, you know, becomes the drummer. Like it's pretty awesome.
But they did a reunion like just this last year, and they played as a band. And about halfway through the set, you know, they were all talking and everything. The bassist just admits, like, guys, I don't even play.
I'm not
like,
actually playing bass.
He plays, and his bass isn't even playing. And then they point the camera to the guy who's playing bass, and he's like, "I'm a TV man." You know what I mean? Like, this is fake. It was so. I was like, "Whoa." I thought, yeah, you kind of look like you sucked a little bit, you know, but now it makes sense. Anyways.
But, like, the guy who's actually playing the bass is who his character is based off of.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
That's what I thought was even cooler.
That's awesome.
The music supervisor for the show is who the drummer was based off of. And, like,
Yeah,
it's a lot of really cool stuff.
It's a good stuff. So, So from My Body Sings Electric and Curious Quail, everybody go watch Gilmore Girls because it's really awesome.
And it's on Netflix, man.
It's on Netflix, all of it.
All right, well, if anybody's still listening, all you out there in Adobe Radio Land, thanks for sitting in with us, Curious Quail. You guys are so rad. Thank you so much for just supporting us and you know, being after us. I'm so glad we're forging this friendship a little bit more. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Next time we're in California, we want to hit you guys up. Maybe we can play a show. Next time we, like, book a tour, and we're going to tell our agent, let's try to get you guys on. Awesome. And anytime you guys are in Denver, please, like, hit us up. We'll go to your show or play it even. Absolutely. Or you guys got places to stay. All that.
Yeah. All right. Anything you guys want to pitch before we get out of here with your song?
So this song is called Rallying Cry. It's our newest single, and it's on iTunes and Bandcamp and Spotify and all that fun stuff. But, if you like rock music with Game Boys and violins and... you're probably going to dig the shit out of this.
And if you don't like those things, maybe you just didn't know you liked them. And you just, you know,
and now you should. Do.
And if you don't like them, fuck you.
You're wrong.
But yeah, Mike's usually doing all our social networkings and social media stuff. So you can check us out on Curious Quail, at Curious Quail, pretty much everything you could think of.
Instagram,
SoundCloud,
Twitter.
Bandcamp, YouTube. We don't have a Tumblr. Twitter.
We do have a Tumblr.
We do have a Tumblr?
See.
Oh, well, now, okay. Yeah, so, I mean, all the things. And,
all right.
Sweet.
Well, thank you, guys. This is Rallying Cry.
Rallying Cry by Curious Quail. Thanks again, guys, for being our guests. This is My Body Seems Electric.
You.
This is The Awful Truth. Tune in next Tuesday on Adobe Radio. Peace.
Hard out.
And this is not the end, she says. She's drenched in blood. You laugh and say, good God, are you crazy? We've out enough.